Welcome to the Cardo Martin podcast, A to Z of building surveying, giving you the lowdown on the world of building surveying. In this episode, we're going to have a chat with Graham Cardo, chairperson at Cardo Martin. This will be our second podcast in 2020 AC, that's after COVID. Things have changed to the way we live and the way we work. Despite the clear facts that a paradigm shift has occurred, our buildings still need repair and preventative maintenance. Leaks still need to be fixed, and the human remains at the heart of our built environment. Keep safe and best wishes to you, your family and community from all at Cardo Martin as you join us once again for a journey through time and materials as we uncover the essentials of roofing defects. In this episode, we're pleased to have Graham Cardo back on the sofa. Welcome again, Graham.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you back on, and for a very different subject to our earlier conversation. So we're dealing with roofing defects. So why don't we kick off with a fundamental question. What is a roof?
Well, a roof is the structure that covers the top of a building. It's there to protect the building from the elements, to provide thermal insulation, and sometimes to allow for installation of plants such as air conditioning and ventilation equipment. And roofs vary from a simple flat roof to an extension to the impressive lead-clad dome of St. Paul's Cathedral.
What are the most common types of roof?
Well, two main types. Flat roofs, typical finishes could be felt, asphalt, which is a bitumen-based material, sheet zinc, sheet lead, glass, and more recently, single-ply membranes and liquid-applied treatments. And pitched roofs typically are finished with tiles, which could be clay or concrete, slate, natural or artificial, lead, zinc, steel, and glass.
It's quite an array of different types. Have you found that there's one that you prefer working on?
Well, I suppose it's all dictated really by the budget. I mean, lead will outlast any building's life, so it's the ideal finish for in terms of longevity, certainly for flat and pitch roofs. So, but it's impractical in large areas, so you would never consider applying lead to a warehouse roof, which is so vast that you'd never have the money to do it, and there'd be no logic to it because the building may require rebuilding in 40 or 50 years anyway. So it's about trying to comply with the limitations of the budget and other factors.
So are commercial and residential building roofs different to each other, or are they technically the same but just different settings?
Well, I've seen all of the roof types and finishes that I mentioned earlier on commercial and residential properties, but some finishes are far more common on particular types of building. So warehouse roofs and industrial roofs are virtually all finished with a profiled steel sheeting because it's cost effective and it serves the purpose required and for that type of building.
And then thinking of the defects that you come across, which are the really common roofing defects that our listeners would be interested to hear about?
Well, all roof finishes have a limited lifespan, varying from 10 years for a basic felt roof to over 100 years for a lead roof. So when those finishes deteriorate, they crack and become defective and need renewal. And defects also occur due to poor workmanship and design. Lead, as I've said earlier, can outlast the lifespan of any building, but premature failure typically occurs due to poor detailing. And the most common failure of lead roofs is due to inadequate provision for thermal movement. And poor design details are also a cause of failure. Omission of adequate ventilation to a roof structure or omission of vapor barriers to prevent water vapor passing into a roof structure can result in rot to the timbers. And warehouse roofs, typically constructed of cold steel, often suffer from corrosion of the sheet ends where they're cut and not protected from corrosion. And another roofing defect is often due to overloading of the structure, sometimes by installing a heavier finish such as tiles compared to original slate. And that causes sag of the timbers and cracking and bulging to the walls below.
You mentioned about the thermal movement with the lead roofs. Is that, well, at least in my head, I'm looking at a very thick piece of lead that's gone over this roof. Is it about as the building goes through its seasonal changes, expands and contracts, and then the lead isn't really built, the manoeuvring isn't there, so therefore it kind of just cracks in half because it can't cope? Or is it more to do with actual thermal properties of the material itself?
Well, all lead is categorized into different codes, which is essentially the weight per square foot or square meter, probably per square foot traditionally. And there's a code of practice for lead work, and that stipulates the maximum lengths of lead that can be installed, either in a flashing, which takes a junction of a roof and a side wall, or a gutter, which could be lined with lead. And if that lead work is laid in too long a length, because it expands and contracts with seasonal changes in temperature, it has to have somewhere to go. And if it's got no joint present, then it lifts and cracks. So that's the reason for providing movement joints. It's not due to the quality of the lead. It's the design detailing and construction detailing that dictate, you know, the performance of the lead in that regard. And it's well established, the procedures that have to be taken to ensure that cracking and damage doesn't occur to lead work.
So in a nutshell, most of the roofing defects could be avoided if the workmanship and design at the initial laying of the roof were better. Would that be fair to say?
Well, subject to the fact that all roof finishes have a limited lifespan. So it's a combination of both. I mean, finishes are going to eventually fail due to age.
Deterioration.
But another, obviously, they've got to be built in accordance with good building practice.
So how do you know when you have a roof defect, especially if you can't see the roof very well? Because I'm thinking of my own house, and the chance of me being able to see the flat roof right on top of the mansard is really, well, it's impossible unless I get the ladders and go up really high. How do I actually tell?
Well, the most common indication of a defect in a roof is water penetrating internally. But the problem then is that significant damage may already have occurred by the time, you know, water comes through, and plaster work, decorations, carpets, etc. will be damaged. So prevention is better than cure. And I would recommend that any roof is inspected at least once a year. And whilst a physical inspection at close hand by a surveyor is the best type of inspection, there are other inspection methods becoming more popular, including drone surveys and cameras mounted on a mast, transmitting video or photos to an iPhone. And of course, mobile access platforms or cherry pickers. And evidence of a roof problem may show itself in distortion and cracking of the walls, which support the roofs. But in most cases, I think regular inspection is the key.
Lovely, thank you. So should I be worried if I can see a roof defect, but there aren't any leaks, or there's nothing happening inside the house or the commercial property that's suggesting that there's a problem?
Yes, it's important to investigate any concerns of this type without delay. For instance, there could be missing slates or tiles visible to the roof, but no leakage is taking place internally. And this would typically because there's an underlining of felt below the slates or tiles, which provides a secondary defence against water penetration. But further tiles or slates could slip or fall to the ground and cause injury to passers-by. When you see a defect, to take action and investigate it further.
So does that mean that you could solve, if it's affecting that felt line, because I'm thinking inside a loft, you could go inside the loft in your house property and you would be able to see that the line perhaps has been penetrated by something sharp, if it's fallen on it, smashed the tile, etc. Is that something you can do if you're unsure and you just want to double check, or would it be better just to get a surveyor in?
I don't think you could really identify the cause of the problem from within the roof space, because you wouldn't be able to penetrate the felt without cutting it, and that wouldn't be a good idea. So a lot of problems with the tiles or slates externally could be due to the age of the tiles or slates, or problems with the nailing of the slates, which could be becoming corroded or defective. So I think an external inspection would be the best way forward in that situation.
In talking about the cost of things, are roofing defects easy to repair? Is this something that I'm really going to have to start saving up for just in case it happens?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, this depends really upon the extent of repairs that are required and the height of the roof above ground level. It's important to remember that whatever repair is required, safe access has to be provided. And this may include an access tower or perimeter edge protection, which increases the cost of the work. And this is because a significant proportion of injuries and fatalities in construction are due to falls from height. So safe access has to be provided, and that can significantly increase the cost. And a further problem with roof repairs is that there may be hidden damage which only becomes apparent when the surface finish is removed. So there may be rot to timbers that becomes evident once you take the roof finish off. And this obviously increases the cost, especially if the rot has become quite extensive. And a further consideration with existing roofs is that depending upon the extent of repair, it may be necessary to upgrade the thermal insulation to comply with current building regulations.
Yeah, so that's a good idea.
Well, it's mandatory, in fact, for existing roofs above a percentage of the roof needing to be replaced. So that's important. And with that, there is a requirement that building regulations consent would normally be required for that kind of work or for other work of a structural nature as well. So that can also increase the cost and require some professional advice as well.
So fixing roofing defects, quite a long job, because now I'm beginning to see that there could be a lot of people on the roof for a long time, or a lot of them fixed in relatively short space of time.
Well, it'll vary. I mean, it's possible to do a patch repair, I suppose, if it's a specific localised defect. But at the same time, you could maybe think it was just a localised defect. But once the work starts, find out that it's a much more extensive problem. And wholesale recovering could be required. It's got a risky area, really, roofing repairs, because of problems of access beforehand to establish, you know, the full extent of the problem and the likelihood that there are hidden problems once opening up is undertaken, which increases cost. So it's good to have a contingency available for issues of that type.
Lovely. Thanks, Graham. Thinking then from a surveying point of view, how does the surveyor add value? At the moment, I'm just thinking, well, if it's a quick job, why don't I just get a builder or a roofer to look at the roof defect? What is it about surveying as a field that can return on investment here?
You can instruct builder to look at your roof. If you know a builder you can trust 100% and is competent. But you have to remember that builders make a living by carrying out building work, not by surveying roofs. So they've got a vested interest in actually undertaking work. And a further point is that a builder may not be aware of the requirement to upgrade current building regulations. He may also require a specification of works. So the safest option is to obtain an independent professional opinion from a building surveyor. In terms of a surveyor adding value, I'd say this is by giving independent advice and offering a solution which is compliant with building regulations and planning, which meets the client's needs and budget.
So just going back to the specification of works comment you made a second ago, what you're basically saying is that if I had the builder around to have a look at it, I'd still have to tell him or her what to do anyway. So I might end up having to pay for an expert to come in and specify the works that actually had to be taking place, and then they would carry out those repairs. Is that what you're saying?
He might not necessarily choose a system that is best value or the most suitable system for the property. He might choose a system that he uses quite a lot that he likes, or that his tradesmen are skilled in performing, but that may not necessarily be the best solution for the job.
So what should I do when I have a leak or notice a roof defect at my property?
Water penetration or leakage is one of the main threats to any building. And this is because water not only damages finishes, but it causes rot to timber and corrosion to steelwork, and defects of that type are costly to eradicate. So the best advice is to report the problem to a property professional as soon as possible. And if you're a tenant, I would report it to the managing agent in the first instance, and then they can point a building surveyor to investigate further. If you're an owner-occupier or a freeholder or a lessee with a repairing obligation, I would appoint a chartered building surveyor.
Lovely. Thank you, Graham. Just one final question from me is, have you ever come into contact with thatched roof a lot? And are these things that you would sort of recommend? Have you worked on them? Is a building surveyor still required on a thatched roof, or is it something that you would go back to the thatcher?
No, very much so. I think the percentage of thatched roofs out of the total roofs is relatively small. Inevitably, in a building surveyor's career, you don't survey that many thatched properties. But I've surveyed quite a few. And interestingly, the statistics indicate the fire risk isn't any higher than traditional roofs. But I mean, there is certainly quite a bit of advice to be given there in terms of the type of material that's been used. Reed compared to straw obviously have different lifespans and longevity. And obviously, when you survey a thatched roof, you can observe defects in terms of, you know, deterioration of the thatch and whatever. And There have been times when I've undertaken surveys of that type and recommended that quotes are obtained for repairs. So there's certainly a role to be played by a building surveyor in terms of roofs of that type, without doubt.
Lovely. Thank you, Graham. So you've been tuned into Cardo Martin's A to Z of Building Surveying podcast. Thank you for listening, and thank you very much to Graham Cardo for joining us today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And for sharing all your experience and knowledge on roofing defects.
No, thank you. I've enjoyed the podcast.